Hi, and welcome to the Handbag Designer 101 podcast with your host, Emily Blumenthal, handbag designer expert and handbag fairy godmother, where we cover everything about handbags from making, marketing, designing, and talking to handbag designers and industry experts about what it takes to make a successful handbag. Welcome, Bobby Williams, to Handbag Designer 101, the podcast. Listen, we are talking to a legend today. Bobby, you have been in the handbag business for more than a minute. Right now, you are the president of Gurkha with an H, for those who don't know. So, and not to age you, but you have stood the test of time where most people run away from the industry and say, it's dying, there's nothing left. And there's so many angry people within handbags saying it's the worst thing and the last thing you should ever get into. And it's such a pleasure speaking to you because you have such a positive outlook, especially working for a luxury brand, in recognizing that people still want handbags and people are still willing to pay.
Yes. I mean, it's a honor and a gift to get to work with Gurkha and the team that we've assembled. And, you know, I think once you get into an industry, you know, it sort of gets in your blood, into your DNA, and you thrive off of it. And I've been very blessed to be involved with some amazing brands, amazing people. And of course, we've created amazing product and branding and marketing to go with all that. So I'm very, very fortunate.
So you started in handbags in travel quite a few years ago. Did you stumble into it, or was this something when you were in college? You're like, if only I could work for a handbag brand, wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah. No, I used to laugh that, you know, when I was in college, I studied marketing, merchandising, and finance. So, you know, I was very fortunate to have that background. And I worked retail. You know, I spent a couple of years playing soccer, and then I shifted, you know, and realized I was going to have to get a degree and get a job, because that time, you know, four decades ago, soccer wasn't a lucrative opportunity for Americans.
You could have gone abroad. No one wanted to. Yeah, no one wanted to bring you to Madagascar. Yeah,
there was zero. In fact, Kyle Rote, the famous old football player, his son Kyle Rote Jr., was the only professional American at that time. So, you know, that was not a reality. My dad made that abundantly clear to me. And so
parents can be good for that, right?
They are. And I started selling men's clothing in Columbia, South Carolina, while I was at University of South Carolina. And obviously you get the bug. You start seeing threads and, you know, as we call it in the business, and dressing with, instead of Basswegians, I wore Cole Haan shawl loafers and pleated slacks and Tattersall checks. And so I really got into the men's clothing business that way through college, selling clothing.
Was that just a job that you were like, okay, this will do? I can't, or was this, you know, you needed to work and you're like, okay, I can do
this?
Yeah,
it was a part-time job, but I had, you know, friends and fraternity brothers that worked in the same stores, and, you know, I'm still in touch with those guys. So, you know, friends on Facebook and see each other at alumni functions, but it established a DNA in me about clothing and dressing and what's right and what's wrong. And, you know, there's, you know, men, we kind of wear a uniform, right? You know, my dad's a retired colonel. I was raised that way. I saw him in his clothing, but he was a natty dresser, and it kind of rubbed off on me. Both of my sons dress. They know what to look like when they go to a cocktail party, to a wedding.
Not a wrinkle in sight.
Well, they're outdoorsmen, so they have wrinkles. But when they're supposed to get buffed up and shined up, they do. And that's a gift. And I've actually carried that on. So when I graduated, I went to Atlanta and worked for Macy's South, which was called Davison's. And I did kind of stumble into it. I'd gotten promoted to an assistant buyer, and one of the Hartman luggage reps invited me to the luggage luncheon. It was a seminar. So I, a free lunch for a young executive. So I walked over at the Peachtree Plaza in Atlanta, Georgia, and I sat next to, as fate would have it, a gentleman named Henry Friedman, who was the regional VP of sales for Hartman. And about a month or two later, he called me and we had an interview, and I made the jump into the wholesale side and never looked back. I had 18 years with Hartman, and it was I joked that it was a master's and a PhD in business and branding and luxury and trade up. And I'm just really blessed. I got to work with so many great retailers, and I had 9 positions in 18 years.
Is that one of those things that do you think, and I attribute so much to obviously who you know, because without that fateful moment, who knows what could have happened? But the fact is, you, and this sounds so trite to say, but you knew how to be polite, you knew how to be courteous, you knew how to walk the walk and speak. And obviously, whatever you imparted with him, he was impressed enough to say, oh, that kid. You know, did you send him a thank you note? I'm so curious.
I'm pretty sure I did. Back then, there was no such thing as computers. You know,
right.
Big, massive things that took up a whole, you know, level of the store. So I wrote a handwritten thank you note to him. I couldn't write an email because there was no such thing. And I remember flying out to Nashville, Tennessee, to meet Ira Katz, the legendary owner of Hartman. And it's actually crazy the way things work. Everything is supposed to happen for a reason. Ira Katz had moved Hartman, the legendary steam trunk company that presidents had used and all that. And he moved it from Racing, Wisconsin in the early 50s down to Lebanon, Tennessee, which is a suburb, if you would, of Nashville, which is now obviously on fire.
Very hot now.
Back then, it was just...
Must be because you moved there.
So. Yeah. It's obviously, you know, it was a country music, the center for Music City USA, etc. But I flew up and I met with Ira Katz by myself, just as a young 20-something-year-old kid. And he was just amazing, his dedication. And he was a Harvard MBA, really, really smart man, and knew what he was doing. And he had built this brand with Hartman, coming out of steamer trunks and realizing airline flight. And he actually created, they were called the 727s and the 747s. They were garment bags and carry-ons that were...
Yep.
What guys, executives had to carry along with briefcases. So I met with Irwin Mutch, who had just come over from Levi Strauss. He was the new executive VP. And I met with Dorothy Penix, who was the vice president of production and manufacturing. So it was a really cool, you know, experience. And Henry Friedman called me on New Year's Eve to tell me I had the job of 1983, believe it or not. So I started in 84 and I just got
blast.
It was so fun. You know, I'm a retailer, I'm a merchant. So I never considered myself a salesperson. I've always thought of, I'm going to work with XYZ retailer to help them grow their business and sell Hartman through them. And I never sold luggage. The last thing I ever want to do is lug a piece of anything through an airport. I always sold the brand and the lifestyle and the adventure. And
did you identify with it? Do you think that's why, or aspirationally, you're like, this is who I think I can be? Because
absolutely.
We talk a lot about having this really deep dive understanding of who your customer is, down to what they eat, the watch they wear, car they drive. And
absolutely. Yeah. Our first ad campaign when I started was, you are what you carry. And it was just so appropriate, and as it is today. And we had a VP of sales that came in from Halston, and he was all about fashion. And he said, if you're spending $1,000 on a suit, you know, as a business person or a business woman, man, etc., how can you carry an inferior plastic attaché? You've got to carry a leather bag, a brief bag. At that time, Hartman was primarily square cornered, you know, boxes with leather wrap, traditional attaches, and we launched into soft briefcases, you know, so that was a huge dynamic. And it was really exciting to be a part of that. And every other year, Hartman always had a new opportunity for me, gave me a new challenge. In 1991, they promoted me to National Accounts Manager, which is has a lot to do with this podcast, because I was in charge of launching the Hartmann women's handbag collection and leather goods and accessories. And I literally did $2.5 million in 9 to 10 months. I traveled all over the country. It was amazing. And
I think that was that really speaks to the fact that it was such an overlooked market that, you know, to be, I mean, what I teach is you need to be the fastest, the first, or the best.
Right.
And there were plenty of women who were business travelers. And I worked for CNN, and that was the demographic that we always spoke about, like X amount of wealth, traveled this much, stayed in these hotels. And, you know, those are the ads. And, you know, they were Marriott, they were this, that, and the other. And to now say, like, now we're creating something for a demographic that's been overlooked, I think it makes sense that it did so well. I want to ask you something, because Hartmann at that time was truly an elite brand. And it's so interesting.
Absolutely.
Like, Louis Vuitton right now is having a competition for their cases to reinterpret them. I think they're doing it for virtual, for Web3 and so forth. And, you know, all these hard case luggage luxury is making a comeback. And the fact that Hartmann ended up getting sold to Samsonite was so interesting to me, because Samsonite is the antithesis of what a Hartmann person was.
Right. Correct. Totally the opposite. Yes. They, you know, Brown-Forman, Lennox China, and Hartmann in 1983, which was when they were, you know, trying to diversify, like you had RJR Nabisco buying Nabisco to diversify into consumer goods or food. And you had, you know, Sara Lee diversifying. They bought
with Coach.
In fact, Sara Lee was going to buy Hartmann and Coach. And apparently there was an issue that happened. They were supposed to be, Hartmann was going to be the men's brand, Coach was going to be the women's brand, et cetera. But Brown-Forman eventually got Hartmann. And they also bought Lennox, and that changed our trajectory, because Lennox was a $400 million business and Hartmann was a $25 million business. So we weren't at the top of the charts. It was only until the late 90s, mid to late 90s, when Peter Lathrop, as fate would have it, an ex-Samsonite president of Europe, came in and ran Hartmann, and he convinced Brown-Forman into bringing Hartmann direct as a division, like Sara Lee did with Coach, to report to Brown-Forman. And that's what moved me on my second stint of accessories and leather goods. I came in from sales management to run as director of accessories at Hartmann, all of our men's wallets, belts, travel kits, agendas. This is when Palm Pilots were coming out.
I miss those so badly. Give me a BlackBerry and I... Listen, I want to jump a little bit, because you, within your trajectory, ended up opening up a brand with your wife.
Mm-hmm.
And we all, you know, one way or another, have a significant partner that comes in and out of our life. What was that like in terms of working with Connie? And I'm so interested, because, you know, she, as we've discussed, is a force within her own right, is an entrepreneur, has done a lot, but you had kids, and I don't know, and considering you traveled so much, I can only assume that the better part of the parenting fell on her. So now to run a company with her, what was that like?
Well, it was, you know, quite honestly, it was a natural thing to do. We had gone through Connie's, you know, entrepreneurial period in 87, 88, 89, when she invented the bench aerobics, the step concept. We went crazy with all that, with, you know, she was IDEA International Dance Exercise Aerobic Person of the Year. And we had 3 videos out on the marketplace. And I was all along in my buttoned up Hartmann conservative, you know, corporate thing. I would show up to events and literally be the only guy that was, you know, look like a business person, you know, that.
Right.
So that was really crazy. And then we had kids and I got promoted. We moved to, you know, did my last part with Hartmann here in Nashville. And then I branched out after September 11th in 2002. And I invested into Lotus Los Angeles. It was at that time kind of a Tumi knockoff brand. They did onyx black leather. They had these little trolleys that were office on wheels, and I cleaned that all up. And I found out in the archives that Loewe and Diego De Santis, their designer, had invented a brand, or created a brand called Low Dis. That's what it was named for. I was like, oh my gosh. I took it and ran with it. We jumped into the women's business.
Yes.
Loaded that. I sold that, and then I licensed the brand. Within 24 hours, I met an executive from Johnson & Murphy, and I ended up being everything non-clothing and non-footwear for Johnson & Murphy, exploded that business. I then went into business with the original founder of Tumi, Charlie Clifford, and his right-hand man, Larry Lean, and we invested and bought into Nomo London in England. And exploded
Nomo with the K.
Yeah, with the K. K-N-O-M-O, knowledge plus mobility. Three really sharp young guys, South African expats living in London. And we just exploded that business with Nordstrom and Bloomingdale's and Apple. And then I ended up selling out of that. And in 2010, I just kind of looked at my wife and said, it's, you know, she encouraged me. I mean, she's crazy and, you know, does the whole thing. All during this time, Emily, I coached soccer, I coached basketball, I did Boy Scouts. I would literally fly back from China, coach a match on Saturday, and then go do the camp out at the kids thing. So, and I'm the lazy one in the family. So my wife's Wonder Woman. And so when we finished all that, it wasn't even I kind of hesitated and paused for a second, like, do we want to enter back into this craziness again? And my wife said, no, I believe in you. Let's do it. And we kind of when we created Bacani, it was a really funny story. My wife and I and the boys, we travel everywhere all the time, and we're dog people. And we had friends that took care of their kids, took care of our dogs. They would house sit. We don't believe in kenneling them. We just, you know.
Yeah.
Springer Spaniels. And we had these young women that were high school kids. One went off to college and the next one took over, and they would always be talking to us, Bobby and Connie this and Bobby and Connie that, and they would say it so fast. The grandmother finally says, why don't you just call them Bo Connie, as you say. And that's how we came up with a name. It sounds Italian. We use Italian leathers. And then this was the really coolest thing. My team that had been with me for Johnson Murphy through Nomo, and, you know, they knew who I was, a family guy. And we talked about it, and the names of our collections were based on my musical interest, because I'm a huge music guy. But we named our lines like they were friends of ours, like they were kids. So my first collection was Hendrix, my very first album, Jimi Hendrix. Then it was Tyler for Steven Tyler, Collins for Phil Collins. And, and it was all my sports stuff and all my music stuff tied up into a very familiar family orientation. So had a blast with it. It was a lot of fun.
Was it difficult because at some point you sold it, correct?
Yep.
To Reebok?
No, I sold it to, Connie sold the bench step. We settled with Reebok out of court. And then that was the early 90s.
Yeah.
And, you know, in 2017, Nordstrom had gone through a really rough patch. Their fourth quarter 15 was tough. They had a rough 16. And it really changed the trajectory of Bacani, because specialty stores, meaning travel goods stores, were shrinking and consolidating. And oh my gosh, so many of my best friends, great people that I've worked with for decades, their kids didn't really want to run the business. So they ended up closing. And it was like every month in 2015 and 2016, there was another mom and pop shop that went out of business. So I became so much more Nordstrom centric that when Nordstrom had a bad patch, it really affected me.
If you ever wanted to start a handbag brand and you didn't know where to start, this is for you. If you had dreams of becoming a handbag designer but aren't trained in design, this is for you. If you have a handbag brand and need strategy and direction, this is for you. I'm Emily Blumenthal, handbag designer expert and handbag fairy godmother, and this is the Handbag Designer 101 Masterclass. Over the next 10 classes, I will break down everything you need to know to make, manufacture, and market a handbag brand, broken down to ensure that you will not only skip steps in the handbag building process, but also to save money to avoid the learning curve of costly mistakes. For the past 20 years, I've been teaching at the top fashion universities in New York City, wrote the Handbag Designer Bible, founded the Handbag Awards, and created the only Handbag Designer podcast. I'm going to show you, like I have countless brands, to create in this in-depth course from sketch to sample to sale, whether you're just starting out and don't even know where to start or begin, or if you've had a brand and need some strategic direction, the Handbag Designer 101 Masterclass is just for you. So let's get started, and you'll be the creator of the next it bag. Join me, Emily Blumenthal, in the Handbag Designer 101 Masterclass. So be sure to sign up at emilyblumenthal.com/masterclass and type in the code podcast to get 10% off your masterclass today.
So I ended up selling the end of 17 to Unify the Leather. They were my belt licensee. So they did Bacani belts made in Italy. And we felt like this was a good partnership. I took on the challenge. They kept me as president and exploded the business in 18, literally almost tripled it. And then we almost doubled that in 2019. And I was easily going to double it again in 2020 when COVID hit. So that changed everything. And, you know, I finished up my stint with them in 2022. And that's when I kind of, you know, I started consulting. I was like, should I retire? Blah, blah, blah. I kind of went through a lot of different things. And I joke that my wife's favorite statement is, don't you need to go to New York or something? You know, which is code for, can you quit rearranging the pantry and get out of leave me alone and go travel and do your thing. So when John Truex and I, leading into where we are now today, John and Richard Lambertson were the creative directors at Hartman in the late 90s, early 2000s. In fact, I was the
before they opened up their own brand.
No. They had their brand and they were on fire. They were the darlings of the fashion industry. And they built on that by signing the contract to go in with Hartman and help resurrect the luggage and business case side. And on the leather goods side, that was me. And, you know, we always had a great relationship. You know, whenever it came up in board reviews and product meetings, they would ask John and Richard, okay, what about accessories? And the standard line was Bobby's got it. You know, I took it from $1 million to, you know, well over $7 or $8 million in 3 years. And there was just no need. I had it. So
Can I ask you a question? Sorry to interrupt. You say a lot, like you showed up and it was this, and then within a year it was, you know, X4, X5, X. Why do you think you are this person who has the capacity to take what already exists that is in plain view of everybody that allows you to really maximize what everybody else is seeing? What do you think is your secret sauce for that? Because, you know, because trends come and go, sales come and go, and handbags went into the tank prior to COVID. And the only part of handbags that truly survived COVID before novelty made a comeback on the heels of COVID was travel. And it was domestic travel. And that's what people were doing. They were getting out. They were driving. They were renting cars. Nobody was really flying, but they were getting out. And the resuscitation of the travel business, I mean, obviously, that's your sweet spot of cases and luggage and so forth. But what do you think? You know, I'm so curious to hear because there's so many people that do what you do that don't do it or couldn't do it or didn't last. So why do you think you've been able to stand the test of time?
I think first and foremost, you have to believe. You've got to believe that you have it within you and that the brand or the product or the company that you're working for. You know, there are a lot of companies that don't have a brand. You know, they don't. They do things for other companies or they do things for other brands. Those are licensing companies, things like that. You know, my dad
was a 20-year, you know, colonel in the Army, flew helicopters in Vietnam, and he was very dedicated. So that's in my DNA. My grandfather was a colonel in the Army. So I've got that kind of thing in me. Where
were you supposed to go in the Army? Or
no, My grandmother wanted me to go to West Point, and I was like, I'm not washing anybody's toilets and doing it for them. That's not my gig. Yeah, I'm a 70s kid, you know, so that was never my thing. I'm very militaristic. I'm very organized and all that type of stuff.
The bed gets made at the corners, the everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I make the bed every day, that kind of thing. So, yeah, my wife is the creative and I'm on the other side. Everything's regimented in my closet, stuff like that. But it's really funny. I think it has to be a core DNA thing inside of you. I'm dedicated. I'm loyal and I'm very committed and I believe. So you take that, then you add passion. And I just have this, I don't know, I've got this little vision thing that when I was at Hartman, I remember looking at Ralph Lauren and going, I would nail it. I know exactly what I would do with leather goods, bags, and luggage. And I would see some really, you know, their clothing is amazing, right? And then I would see some bag that was at that time in the 80s made in China. And it was a disconnect.
Yes.
I'm not a disconnect guy. I'm a connect guy. I see it. When I was with Lambertson Truex, for example, when I launched the men's line with John and Richard, I was like just totally obsessed with their leather choices, suedes, the linings. And John, he knew how to tell the story, but he needed me to just say, yeah, we want to stay focused on, you know, blacks, browns, and cognacs. We can give a pop of color on the inside. Let's do a touch here and there. That's what the LT brand was about. Every time I walked out of their showroom, I would call my wife. I've just got, it's just so gorgeous. It's so sophisticated. When I was with Nomo, it's a modern brand. They were young. People ride trains in Europe, right? They ride trains to work. They walk. They ride bikes. So our photography, working with Benoit, our creative director, I got into it in that look, right? Because that's what was right for Nomo. I didn't take a Johnson Murphy bag and design it for Nomo. I designed with Nomo, correct? And then when I was at Johnson Murphy, that was pretty easy. I had a Hartman traditional background going into a traditional brand like J&M. Boom. I'm not going to say it's easy, but we crushed it. I created things like I was on an airplane. I remember exactly where I was. I was going through a J&M catalog. I'm very tactile. This is before Pinterest. And so I'd always bring three or four magazines and I'd go through looking for things that inspired me. And I saw on the J&M thing, they had a picture of the sole of their shoe that had a waffle print on it. I immediately contacted a buddy of mine who was a designer. And I said, I want to take that waffle sole and I want to create it and put it as bumpers. Instead of putting feet on the bottom of my Johnson & Murphy bags, I created soul bags and I made those things on the bottom of it, S-O-L-E. And it was amazing. We crushed it. So it was a lot of fun. So now that I'm at Gurkha, I have John Truex as a creative director. So he's doing most of that. And, you know, but I'm constantly thinking of where should Gurkha go? What should Gurkha do? We have the leathers. We have the 50 years of archives. Next year will be our 50th anniversary. So I'm already into it and thinking about things like that. But we have such tangible, you know, people would die to have Gurkha's brand DNA. I mean, it's just Field and Stream, you know, whether you're a hunter or a fisherman, it's there. We have that. You know, I think that country club resort leisure, we have that DNA with our bags. You know, the business traveler, we have that. So we're resurrecting four-wheel trolleys, which Kirk has done in the past, but we're going to update it and do it to where it fits for today's consumer. So very, very exciting.
How are you able, because, you know, you are a loyalist to the brands that you commit to, and it's old school to stay at companies as long as you have and as long as you continue. It just is. People don't do that anymore.
Right.
And I think a lot of it you know, obviously has a lot to do with, on a personal level, you don't feel like your contribution matters or your view doesn't matter, or you're not getting the same respect, or, you know, for whatever generationally how people feel and what leads them to leave. How are you able, within that cycle of the companies that you ended up moving from, how are you able to say, okay, my time is done?
Yeah.
How are you able to make that segmentation? Because to who you are, it seems almost off-brand that you left any company.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was challenging. You know, through my Hartman career, it was like every other year, Hartman knew I was getting offers from Coach, from Cole Haan, from Raleigh Bicycles. I mean, I had a tremendous. It was like, I used to joke, okay, I'm the flavor of the month, meaning flavor of the year. And Hartman would automatically know it, sense it, and promote me and give me a new challenge. And so leaving Hartman was huge, but it was, you know, 4 months after the Trade Towers went down and the horrific 9/11 events and the attack on our country and our way of life. And it was a big decision, but this guy from Lotus, who'd owned Lotus, he had had it for 20 years, and he needed help. And at the same time, he had offered me a job the year before, and I turned him down, said only if it's equity. Well, he called me and said, you got your equity if you want it. So I'd always said that when I leave Hartman, it's not going to go to Toomey or Coach or Cole Haan. It's going to go to a company where I can have a stake in it. So that ownership stake was real important to me. But I think, you know, I'll sum it up in a funny, you know, kind of quirky thing. But we were at a dinner party the day I got back from Los Angeles after I flew out, cemented the deal with Lotus in January of 2002. And I overheard my wife telling the other wives in the kitchen while the guys were having a bourbon or a scotch or whatever. And I heard her say, you know, they were all like, oh my God, Bobby was Hartman, you know, and he lived it. And she said, Bobby finally realized that he couldn't save Hartman. And it's a big deal, you know, for me. So yes, loyalty's really difficult. But I do think once you do that and you know, I started in with Lotus, it was hard. No men were spending money. Our portfolios were shattered. It was rough in 2002. But, you know, my wife was like, you know, hey, you've got two kids and me, you need to go out and go do something. And that's when I started creating. And we were in a Starbucks in Kowloon for the leather fair in March of 2002. When I sat down with Stanley Bauer, my ex-partner at Lotus, and he said, okay, what do you want to do? You've been with the company 2 months. I'd already opened up El Pertil and Bentley's and Mori Luggage and all the different, you know, accounts. And we were on a roll sales-wise, right? But he said, what do you want to do product-wise? And I said, well, number one, it's women's. We have got to get into the women's business because even though most men aren't spending money, women are still accessorizing.
Yes.
Still buying leather goods. They're buying handbags. And they will help us. And we had one small little division of wallets that we were selling in Southern California. The buyer was in Northern California. We had a great rep, Diane, and she was begging for help. And I said, okay, we're going to go after women's. And I talked them into it. And we launched, and within 8 months, in 1 month, when we launched our new line, we booked more than Lotus did. In 1 month, we booked more than they did in the 18 months previous. It was on fire.
So, I mean, I think that just goes to show that you have a gift of seeing where gaps are in the market. And I'm so grateful of your perspective and your optimism and recognizing that. You know, and I hate saying this, but listen, I'm Garmento Offspring. There are so many bitter people within the handbag industry. There are so many angry people. Oh, the business is shot. The business is shot. Oh, yeah. It's terrible. What are you doing? Oh, it's all going to off price, off price, off price. And
that is a curse. Yeah, everybody's just gone away from China and gone to India, and they're just, it's like the lowest common denominator, you know? And why are we doing that when there are other options. And I think that's what's really so exciting now in my career, to be working with American factories and an American brand. We are an American luxury leather brand. And I challenge people. I've been saying this ever since I jumped back into this in May of 2023. Name another American brand that makes bags and leather goods in the United States. That's a luxury brand, you know.
Right, it's, right.
It's kind of a raw, handcrafted cottage industry vibe that was out there a decade ago. It's kind of softened now. Most of those companies don't exist. Some of them do. But, you know, I really, Gurkha makes an exquisite American product that is, you know, literally, we're not Louis Vuitton, we're not Hermes, we're not, certainly not Gucci, and, you know, and more fashion driven, but we're Gurkha. And when you know Gurkha, you know it. It's undeniable. It's got a look to it. And that's gets me fired up. That's what I'm excited about. It's so fun. And we just went to a trade show in Chicago and we tweaked the show booth signage where it, you know, we normally have Gurkha on it. And our designer said, you know, we told him this story that people just keep stopping. And they're just like, they stop dead in their tracks and are like, Gurkha. And we're like, yes, Gurkha. So we put yes in cursive with an apostrophe above the Gurkha logo, just for the trade show to kind of have fun with it. And they all stop and they're like, they get it. They're like, oh my gosh, Gurkha. And, you know, it's so fun because Gurkha literally owned the men's store business. They were the quintessential bag, briefcase, weekender, duffel, shave kit, wallet. You know, if you were in the men's industry, over 5,000 stores nationwide, you carried a Gurkha bag or a heart bag, but primarily men's stores carried Gurkha because it was natty. It was more different. It had a little style vibe to it. It wasn't corporate. Hartman was corporate. You know, so if you worked at Hewlett Packard or IBM, you carried a Hartman. But if you worked at Saks and Bloomingdale's or at these men's stores, you carried Gurkha. So it was really cool.
I just want to ask you one last question. In terms of understanding your customer, right? It's a cross section because you still have people like you who are still working, still traveling, still have a certain socioeconomic level. And then you have, as always, a newer, younger generation that you want them to be early adopters and carrying a brand. What are you doing? And what do you think that needs to be done for brands like Gurkha to have an appeal to a newer, younger audience?
Yeah, you are correct. There's a country club set, which I call it, which is that leisure. You know, they carry Gurkha. I always use the expression that, you know, there's a four-door sedan made by Chevrolet or Ford, and then there's a four-door sedan made by Mercedes or BMW or Porsche. And that's the difference in a Gurkha and a, you know, entry-level commercial product. And so there's definitely difference there. And I see that executive is, you know, he's a working or she's a working person. They're getting on flights and they're moving. They've got board meetings. They've got, you know, sales meetings, investors meetings, et cetera, presentations. And then you have that club set, which is more field and stream club in those levels, which is more, I'm not working, my money's working for me, and this is the way I'm going to travel. We just brainstormed this in my second month on the job. How do we go out and get new customers? How do we sell my sons? How do we sell, you know, the next generation? And there's the traditionalist that it's handed down, right? Meaning the brand, son or daughter, this is a brand you like. Like my sister introduced me to Gurkha. She was into Gurkha in college because her sorority sisters were, that was a clicky brand to them. It was very cool. You know,
so what was the end result to say? What can we do to get this?
So in our thing, we have Marley Hodson, our founder's original smooth chestnut leather and smooth black leather, which is a saddle tan leather that Marley started with.
And over time, I want to say probably in the late 80s, mid 80s, he discovered a vintage tannage that was even cooler. And it has dominated Gurkha's look for the last 30 plus years. So this smooth leather has remained as a, you know, it's been in leather goods. It's been in some of our gifts. But, you know, we as a team, John had created an initial capsule of product that was smooth leather and nylon, which is a new vibe, a different look, much more modern than the twill, traditional twill that Gurkha still uses and sells today. So we've created a new collection that's going after a younger, not just young in age chronologically, but young at heart and mind. And it's much more of a metropolitan look. It's a monochromatic black on black, chestnut on chestnut look. We're using the same Gurkha hardware, the same Gurkha leather, but it's in that smooth matte finish. And that La Manta Italian nylon just gives it a lighter weight and a much more updated look. And we think that's our ticket to getting into the next generation of vibe, not just age, but a vibe. Like, I would love to carry that line. That's a line that's faster, quicker than the traditional Gurkha. We call it original collection. And I love the new line, and we're getting really good responses on it. So we think it's going to be, you know, we'll eventually grow into leather goods and accessories, handbags, things like that. So I think that's the other part, is the vibe that you create with that new collection, but then doing more entry-level price points, meaning wallets, journals, card cases, travel items, travel kits. They're great graduation gifts. They're groomsmen's gifts. They're, you know, things like that. That's how we start introducing younger men and women into our product and our brand.
Bobby, this has been the most action-packed, men's-driven. I'm so very grateful for your time and your knowledge and your contribution to handbags, because, you know, you are valued and cherished within the industry, and I hope you absolutely never stop. How can people get their hands on a Gurkha bag, follow Gurkha? What can they do?
Oh, absolutely. Well, Gurkha.com is our website, and we're also at Gurkha on Instagram, Facebook. We're very active in the social channels. We have an amazing following. I mean, we have consumers that have been, you know, I did a series of trunk shows with my new team on the sales side, and we've been doing trunk shows at Stanley Korshak, at Hinton and Hinton in Oxford, Mississippi, Lyle's Clothing in Raleigh, North Carolina. And it's just amazing. Jay Michaels here in Nashville. And I've had at all four different trunk shows that I personally attended, I've had customers walk in with their 40 plus year old Gurkha bags.
Yeah.
So it's really incredible to think of what those bags have seen, you know, over 40 years. So it's a fraternity and a sorority.
That's open to all.
Yeah, that's open to all. And, you know, we appreciate everybody's look. We're expanding, I'll also say, not just domestically in better specialty stores, but we're now up to four retail partners in Japan. So we launched with Tomorrowland's new concept store, Maisonette Voyage, which is all about travel, the house of travel. We're launching this spring with Beams Plus. So very, very excited to be expanding the brand internationally as well. So
amazing.
Plenty of places to find Gurkha.
And this is G-H-U-R-K-A, Gurkha.
Correct. Gurkha.
Thank you. Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much, Bobby. It's been a pleasure.
Emily, thank you.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to rate and review and follow us on every single platform at Handbag Designer. Thanks so much. See you next time.